is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Another candidate interviewed today, another person running for governor, Mark Thielman, with us, former superintendent of the Alsea School District. Mark, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me.
So I guess, first of all, talk about, let's back up to the beginning. What process did you go through that led to you deciding to run for governor?
Well, I've done legislative work for the last 10 years, mostly with education policy, also with PERS reform and, kind of some solving complex problems issues. About time we got around to 2018, I had come up with a solution to PERS. And Governor Brown had it studied. It cost about $50,000. And then all the experts came back and said, hey, this solves the problem, and it continues to create a good benefit for employees. And generally, most people would say, well, this is a winning concept. Let's go pass it. Instead, I got screamed at by Governor Brown and several Democrat people that I was working with on that. And they told me, literally, you were not supposed to solve the problem. And that was pretty much when I made up my mind. COVID cemented that after the way that this particular group of leaders have handled COVID. As you know, I kept my school district open during COVID. They said that we were going to have all kinds of outbreaks and things, and we had zero cases traced to the classroom all year. And so we have been poorly led. And it is really, really important for the people of Oregon to start letting their voice be heard. And we need a change in leadership, and we need to change to a leader that produces results.
Talk about your background in education, how you got interested in the profession, some of the things you did that ultimately culminated in being superintendent.
Well, I grew up in business. My dad was owner of Easy Loader Boat Trailers in Spokane, Washington. And so when you grow up in manufacturing and business, it's all about what you can produce and building relationships and, labor and materials and design, all that. And I thought to myself, well, I could go into business, but it just seems so impersonal. So I did a crazy thing. I decided to be a career educator. And I think that the two worlds really meld well because, one, business relies on good education and educated workforce, but two, I'm a people person. So I really enjoyed it. I taught for 7 years, then I became an assistant principal for two, and then a K-12 principal after that, and then a superintendent. So it's been 20-some-odd years of just working with kids and families. It's been a wonderful, wonderful experience.
How many different districts did you work in?
Oh, gosh, a few, I know it's almost 20-something years. So, one, two, three. I think I've worked in five, which is slightly below the average for administrators.
What do you like?
If you could believe that.
What do you like about the Alsea area?
Well, Alsea is a beautiful, beautiful small town. It's really kind of like the bedrock of America kind of small town. And the people there are open. And like all small towns, it has its idiosyncratic behaviors. But in general, Alsea is kind of like a lost toy community because with the demise of timber, the town died economically. It was once over almost 2,000 people, and now it's down to a little over 300.
Wow, that's a big shift there. And what were the how big was the district in terms of enrollment?
Well, when I took it over in 2011, we had 117 students on the first day of school, and now we have, around 1,000. So I would say that, we've been very successful at expanding the district and building its footprint, and also its economic power and its ability to pay family wage jobs or create family wage jobs for people. The school district is the number one employer in the community, as you can imagine.
Now, how did you get from the starting number to 1,000? That's a big jump. Did that involve building additional buildings?
Well, non-additional buildings. So the building was actually built for the larger populated town. So it can handle about 300 kids. And, of course, it was way under enrolled. So we were able to have some growth capacity without having to build more space. however, we did just recently pass the first bond in district history, and we'll be adding four classrooms in that building. Alfie will.
So a lot of folks that are in education tend to work their way, as you did, from the classroom into an administrative role. It's rare, and I was trying to think about it this morning. I'm not recalling any other person running for governor in recent decades that came out of being a school superintendent.
Yeah, there has not been any that I have been able to discern. So I guess I'm a trendsetter that way. The thing is, again, because of my legislative work for 10 years and my connection politically with both Democrats and Republicans, and, you know, the consulting things I've done as well in terms of good policy, I would argue I'm well balanced. This is the right time for a superintendent to step up and take the helm for the whole state.
So if you were elected, if you got the nomination, and if you were elected in November, what kind of things would be on your priority list?
Well, first and foremost, obviously, ending any mandates that may still exist. That's first and foremost. Reforming and rerouting the direction of the Department of Education back to reading, writing, math, back to achievement, back to meeting the needs of 100% of students. And that's a big cultural shift. Obviously, getting tax policy, the cap tax reformed, the a moratorium for any new taxes for small and medium-sized businesses, compensation for people who were who had their civil rights violated under COVID, and told that, you know, it's you either get the jab or lose your job. I think we've seen the reality of the facts play out on that, and what we had was a government that was greatly overreaching for political reasons. And you know, the work we did in LC by moving to mask optional pretty much put the nail in the coffin, and proved with real action science, because we were able to operate for 3 weeks and we had continuing decline in Omicron cases in the community and the school. And what does that tell you? It tells you masks never did work, and that our government was not being truthful. And the worst thing you can do in politics or in leadership is give people half-truths, because that is the recipe for division. And that's what this governor and this current government have done.
As you look at the race right now, so many people running for governor, I am sure a record number. We're into the 30s now, and that's never happened that I'm aware of in Oregon. That means you've got a tough primary and a dozen or more other members of the GOP that want the same job.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I think we're advantaged. You know, I have a large name recognition footprint. And then the message is so right. You know, we really hit on the important messages. Parents are now the largest interest group in Oregon politics. And I poll very well among parents.
And what's been the response to your campaign as you got started?
Well, at first people almost chuckled, as you can imagine, but they are not chuckling now. Now I've been considered a front runner. I was just paid honors up at the Lane County gubernatorial debate. They arranged it so I spoke last, and that's a little thing that they do in the party politics to say, hey, we're going to let this guy speak last, because the straw poll was that I was strong.
And how did that whole event go for you?
Oh, it was awesome. 500 plus people. It was standing room only. They had to turn people away, which is unfortunate, because, you know, you can only have so many. We're still in the mandate. And to see that many people, just regular, everyday, working Oregonians, wanting to come in and meet the candidates, it shows the engagement is way up among conservatives. It's a wonderful thing.
How many of the candidates were there?
I think there were nine or 11. I didn't actually count them all, but a fair number.
And have you been doing other events where it's multiple GOP candidates are there?
Yeah, I've done several. There's a whole series of panel debates that are, you know, in various counties and all that. I think I've done well over a dozen of them.
Going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. Mark Thielman, Republican candidate for governor. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1246 inside Douglas County. News Radio 93.9 and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. Peter Greenberg, Eye on Travel at 4. On tomorrow's program, a business feature, a new program from CCD Business Development. We'll have a couple staff in to talk about that. Mark Thielman with us right now, Republican candidate for governor. Mark, let's focus specifically on what you've spent your career doing, the areas of education. What kinds of things would you change in Oregon's education arena if you become governor?
Well, I think the most important thing is you have to tell people the truth, that when it comes to reaching 100% of students and meeting 100% of those needs educationally, one size model of education does not fit all. And so we have to really break open the culture that's the oppressive culture that says, you know, it's all public school or it's all brick and mortar schoolhouse. So parent choice is so important. And then creating flexibility within school districts to have multiple pathways for students to pursue based on their individual needs and then the concerns and needs of the parents. So the way that I would approach it, the way we structured it in LC is, as I explained to all my staff way back in 2011, and then it pervaded throughout my tenure of 11 years there, is that parents are the customer. The product is the education we provide and the relationships we create with children, who then go home and report to the parent that they like going to school, and the parents see the kids learning and growing and being smart, and then that creates word of mouth, and more kids come, and it's an engine that rolls. And we really need to get back to that kind of culture. Right now we have a very disconnected and disjointed public education system that says parents are the problem. And I would argue differently. I would say that parents are the customer, they're the solution. And parents are the most important part of that relationship. And getting behind the parents and supporting them and trusting them to make those decisions is the biggest culture shift we could make in education.
In 2020, in the spring, we had that last-minute extra-long spring break, and then, boom, it was online all over the place. How did that go for you and Elsie?
Well, we were online 2 weeks ahead of everyone else. We didn't wait to be told. It was very clear they weren't going to let us open back up for the rest of that quarter. And, you know, you think we would have gotten some kudos and a pat on the back. But instead, I got nasty grams from the Department of Education saying that we needed to stop and slow down because we were making them look bad. So that is not the kind of culture that is open-minded and welcoming and supportive of people being innovative and taking the bull by the horns and working to meet the needs of parents.
Let's talk about some of the other areas. First of all, what would you do as governor in terms of taking a look at the Oregon State budget?
Well, with the budget, again, there's two things you want to do, because this is what this government does, is they always purposely underestimate their estimated revenue for the upcoming biennium. And then they go out to the people and they march out with education and public safety and say, we don't have enough money and we know we're not going to have nurses and firefighters and teachers. And then they get all these little tax adjustments, and then they overcollect the tax, and then they have $2.5 billion like they just had this current session right now, extra money. Well, that's and that's because they underestimated the revenue, and then they increased their taxes, which are a burden on people. We currently have, per capita, comprehensively, the highest tax rate of all 50 states. But we have a very small population compared to other high-tax states like Illinois, New York, or California. What progressives in this state have done is they've created economic hardship in every sector of the economy. Whether you go shopping at Walmart or whether you're trying to log some trees or sell your crop or ship your hay, you get tax. And we have to get ahead of that. We have to tell people the truth. We have to reduce those rates in general for small and medium businesses in particular. And people need to see that economic relief in their pocketbook. That's the number one priority when I take office.
I would think you might have a unique perspective on what's ahead for the public employees retirement system.
So my solution was to create a fourth tier that was very lucrative. So every public employee would basically be retaining 12% of their income for a 30-year career. And what was powerful about it is it not only reduced the cost of the unfunded liability for the PERS system, but people would be wealthier when they retired, which means that they don't need to go on disability. They don't need to get on Social Security. They don't need Medicare. They'd be able to fund and take care of themselves. So when you factored in those benefits into the future, into that analysis that was done in terms of the broader economy, the future would be very bright with a policy solution like that.
What about Oregon's receptivity to the business community?
Well, I think Oregon has a bifurcated relationship. If you talk to conservative people, which is a growing population, fortunately, here in Oregon, they see business as the backbone and the heart of the economy. If you talk to folks on the progressive side that have their steeped in Keynesian economic ideology in which money is imaginary, businesses are a source of greed and exploitation. To me, that's asinine. Businesses are the very thing that creates the very wealth that our government has enjoyed taxing. You cannot overtax the little guy, which is what this particular governor has been doing, and she's been doing it because they tend to have a high degree of open-minded entrepreneurial, aka more independently minded and conservatively minded people that run a lot of these small businesses. And for her, that's why she closed them. It was ideological, it was political, and it did great harm to just thousands of good people.
What about Oregon's infrastructure? I mean, that's a word we heard a lot the last couple of years coming out of the federal government, but there's a lot of state buildings, roads, bridges, things like that. Where are we at?
Well, again, if you're going to apply a political lens to all your projects, you'll end up with very few, and the ones that you do fund will be overcost and not really useful. My policy is very clear. I'm the first to come out. We start with the ports. We have to absolutely upgrade and modernize our ports, especially the one in Coos Bay. We need to have a shipping container depot in Coos Bay, and I need a big one. We need to rebuild roads that connect from the ports to the rest of the state. We need to open up Oregon as a international trading hub and get the politics out of the port in Portland, which is still running at under capacity. Every dollar you bring in international goods and shipping, both import and export, equals $6 by the time it gets up through the top of the economy through the urban area in Portland. So why would we, one, not develop those gateways, and two, why would we tax people at the bottom of that, a.k.a. the loggers and the farmers and the ranchers and the small business people that help create markets for that commerce? So we really need to tell people the truth. We need to get people oriented back to supporting their friends and neighbors and their local businesses.
One thing of particular interest here in Southern Oregon is federal forest policy. What are your thoughts?
Well, my plan is to, on day one, I will send a notice to the federal government. They have 90 days to reply to, and they have 90 days to begin managing the forests based on science in a way that also takes into effect the effects of massive forest fire, catastrophic forest fire burns have had both on the environment too, on our communities, especially our rural communities, many of which completely burned up. It is a self-inflicted wound caused by an intransigent federal government that has too much power and too much of Oregon's land, and we're going to take some of that back.
And if people want to find out more about you, some of your thoughts, get connected with your campaign, how do they do that?
Well, the best place to go is to my website. So it's Mark, M-A-R-C, C stands for conservative, and then for Oregon, it's all spelled out. So Mark, for, F-O-R, Oregon.com. Got all kinds of content, donations, volunteer, all that stuff there.
All right, Mark Fielding, candidate for governor of Oregon. Thanks for being on today.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
1258 inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.